format and hold our monthly speaker meeting. I've asked Tarek to come up and introduce tonight's speaker.
My name's Tarek, I'm an addict. If you were to ask me what individual has impacted my life more than anybody else, I would have to say this man has. I've learned so much from this man, and I've known him longer than I've been clean over 14 years, and I've known him longer than 14. I've known him for 16 years. And he made being in recovery and living a spiritual basis of life look cool when I was here. And I looked up to him, and at that time I had never had a father figure in my life. And it was, he unconsciously I put him in that role in terms of like learning things from him about being a man, about being a member of the recovery community, how to participate at a very high level. If you ask me what do I miss about Atlanta the most outside of my family, my parents? We used to do this big book study on Tuesday nights, and Dante and I and Hannah would meet at Starbucks like every Tuesday night at like 5:30. And that's one of the things I miss the most about Atlanta. I've learned so much about the world from this man, recovery. One of the coolest things he taught me was early on. I don't know if he's going to remember this, but so I was initially sponsored by a man he sponsored, and then I sort of gravitated to Dante when I got around step 8, and he was my sponsor for a year and a half, year and 9 months after that. Has remained one of my closest friends and a man that I look up to and my mentor the entire time. But I remember wanting to meet up with him, and he had a new guy he was working with, and we used to do this Friday night CA meeting in Sandy Springs in Atlanta. It was a very big meeting at the time. And he asked me to meet him at the church. This is an 8 o'clock meeting. He's asking me to meet him on a Friday night. And it was like between 5:30 and 6 that we were meeting at the church. And I'm thinking to myself, why am I getting there 2 hours before this meeting starts? And we got to the church and we were talking, and there happened to be a big book study upstairs that they did. And we walked it, like we sat around, we chopped it up. He went upstairs with the guy that he was working with. But before that, he walked me into the auditorium, and there's a closet, and there's all these risers and stacks and stacks and stacks of chairs. And he's like, here's what I want you to do. I want you to roll all of those out and strategically place them in different areas in the auditorium. And there'll be a few guys here to help you do this. I got to go upstairs to do this big book study. And so he comes down from the big book study, some guys show up, they help us set up the meeting, and then we go outside, and I noticed, I watched him like a hawk. I watched how he greeted people, how so many people knew who he was, how he was an elder in that group, and people looked up to him, and he cared about the group. So we had the meeting, and after the meeting, he didn't run off and just go start talking to all his friends. He like started helping break down the meeting. Right, and he was one of the last people to leave, and it wasn't, he didn't ask me to go to Longhorn. He said, hey, we're going to Longhorn. And so we went up to Longhorn. I got home at around 11:30 that night. That job became my job for almost the next 2.5 years, where I had set up that meeting on Friday nights. Friday night home group became like a 6-hour activity. And what he did, whether he knew it or not, is he taught me about the meeting before the meeting. He taught me about the meeting and the meeting after the meeting. And he has spoon-fed me the program of recovery out of this big book, not through transmission of information, but he showed me, like I watched him. And so what I encourage anybody to do is if you find someone that exhibits excellence, you just ask them questions and do what they do. And that's what I've tried to do. He's been the greatest role model I've ever had. And with that, I give you Dante.
Thank you very much. I'm Dante. I'm a drug addict and alcoholic. And I don't know what y'all do here, how y'all do it, other than I'm sure everybody, you know, at some point or another works the steps, hopefully. But just so you know, my sobriety, I've been sober 33 years, October 10th, 1988. And, you know, and I'm going to brag for just a minute, but that is kind of, I do the exact same thing with everybody today. All right. I get to my home group on Thursday nights. It's an 8 o'clock meeting. I get there at 6 o'clock, 6:15. If somebody's with me, great. If they're not, great. I set all the chairs up and I do stick around and break it all down. And I do talk to newcomers to this day. I talk to anybody to this day because it's something that I enjoy. But, you know, what any links look like is me. All right. And I'm not bragging, but that's just the way it is because, you know, when I was young and growing up, you know, they talk now they have words and names and initials and all this stuff for, you know, how screwed up we are. They'll talk about, oh, he came from a dysfunctional home and, you know, he's got ADHD or HQ, we wait or whatever. You know, the fact is that when I was growing up, they didn't call it any of those things. I grew up in all that, you know, but it was all just normal to me, you know. And then somewhere along the line, you know, alcohol was introduced to me, and then weed was introduced to me, and then cocaine was introduced to me. And, you know, what happened is a normal kid who grew up in a normal life to himself, all of a sudden my priorities started to change. And, you know, drugs started becoming, you know, what I wanted to do and who I thought I was. And, you know, we would sit around, you know, me and my friends, and we'd be, you know, smoking weed or whatever, and we'd be talking about, yeah, I can see me doing this at 80 on the porch of my house. And I think everybody probably goes through that. And somewhere along the line, the trouble started. You know, first it was the, you know, you quit playing sports and then you quit getting good grades and then you, you know, spend more time in the places in school you're not supposed to be. And, you know, you get kicked out of schools and then you get kicked out of another school and then you get sent to this home and you get sent to that place. And, you know, all these things happen. And all that was just the way it was for me. And somewhere along the line, I think my first treatment center was I was 18 years old. Me and my brother and two other guys had gotten in trouble. My brother was 16, and then the three of us were 18. And so my mom had arranged for my brother, when he went before the judge, to not have a choice. And he got sent to, and they didn't call them treatment centers in the 80s. They called them drug rehabilitation centers. And so my mom had my brother placed in one. It was a place called Straight Incorporated, and it believed that peer pressure got you into drugs, peer pressure would get you out of drugs. And it was a very, very, very tough love, heavy duty, you know, in your face kind of place. Like I was there for, you know, not that I counted, but 186 days. And so my brother went, and then we went to court, me and these three guys, we were all 18, and he started with me, said, I'm gonna give you a choice. You can do a year and a day, and that meant you had to serve a year in Volusia County Jail, or you can go to drug rehabilitation. I'm not a dumbass, so I'll go to drug rehab, right? And the other two guys went to jail. So Straight, that was my first introduction to, they did 12 steps, but they had them numbered 1 through 7. A couple of them were combined, but this is what they did. And, you know, so I get there for 3 days. They don't let you talk. You sit in the front row and you just, you know, you watch and you listen. And so in 3 days, I watched and I listened and I learned and I figured out what to do and what not to do. And so when it was time for me to talk, I said all the right things. They have phases. I moved through all the phases real quick. And before I, you know, ran off into the night and disappeared to Atlanta, because this place was in Sarasota, Florida, you know, I was being trained to be a staff member because, you know, I went along to get along. All right. And the sole intention of everything I did was was planning my escape route. All right. And so I left and I came to Atlanta. And, you know, I think I left out of there, I don't know, I might have stayed sober for, you know, 24 hours, 48 hours, or somewhere in there. It wasn't long, you know, because I didn't have any intentions on staying sober. And I end up in Atlanta, and everything in Atlanta got even worse, even faster. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know, probably like everybody in this room, one day I was sitting around and decided, you know, my life just can't get any better. I need a relationship to God, so I'm going to go to a CA meeting. Right? Ain't that how y'all ended up here? Right? So, yeah, it wasn't quite like that. You know, I had met a girl, and I had fallen in love. And, you know, she had, you know, caught me doing things that you don't want to catch somebody that you think you're going to spend the rest of your life with doing, you know. And so somewhere along the line, I decided, you know what, I'm going to ask this one to marry me. She's a good one. So I did. And the focus went from, you know, me being a clusterfuck to we're getting married. You, as long as I was bringing the money home to pay for the stuff, the focus wasn't on me. It was on the wedding and the event and all that kind of stuff. And so we had a big wedding, got married, and went on honeymoon, came back, and that was in June, and I think September she packed up and went to her mama's house and said, I'm never coming home unless you get sober. So, you know, the way it went for me was 100% without a doubt, when I came back here, it was so that my wife would come home. All right, it was not, you know, because I wanted to be happy, joyous, and free. I didn't understand that and didn't really give a shit. But I wanted my wife to come home. And so I started going to meetings. And really, let's back up. So somewhere in there, my brother ended up in a treatment center. And so the meetings I would go to would be to his treatment center. And we would sit in the back. And he would tell me about all how fucked up everybody was. And, oh, this guy, man, he's a weird one. And that girl, man, wouldn't believe what she said today. And, you know, and that would be on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, it would be AA meetings. On Friday, it was a NA meeting, which was actually kind of good because without knowing it, that meeting was a guy sat in the room and he did a big book, whatever they call the NA book, I'm not familiar, but whatever they call that book study. And he was very entertaining and it was very good. All right, so I kind of would pay attention to some of that. He was a cool dude, you know. And then Saturday night was a Cocaine Anonymous meeting and I'd never been to one. Sunday was a Cocaine Anonymous meeting and I'd never been to one. And so the people that came, you know, the people are really, we're all the same, but in my mind, the people that walked into the CA meeting were a little bit hipper, a little bit slicker, and a whole lot more cool than the guys in AA and even the ones in NA. So I thought, you know, and I started meeting them and got to know some names, and they would invite me to other meetings. And, you know, so all of a sudden, I'm 30 days sober. All of a sudden, 60 days. All of a sudden, you know, all of a sudden, I'm picking up the chips. And the guys that I hooked up with, there were about 10 of us that became really good and went to, you know, probably 6 meetings a week together. You know, we were trying, you know. So we would talk about step one, and then it would be what I thought that meant. And then, you know, Ron, he may think it meant something else, and John may think it meant something else. And so we would kind of, you know, toss it around, and somewhere along the line, you know, everybody had done a first step. And then that's how we kind of did step two. And then that's kind of, and I'm serious, we were trying. It wasn't like, you know, we were all staying sober together. All right? And, you know, like I'll give an example. Everybody did a four step. My uncle at the time, now you figure this is 1989, May, about 1989. I'd been sober for getting up close to a year. And I called the person who I know with the most time in the universe, and that was my uncle, who at that time had 25 years of sobriety. And I said, hey, man, there's a whole group of us. We're fixing to do four steps. What do we do? He said, I'll send you some stuff. Just wait. And, of course, it wasn't an email because they didn't have that shit. So he actually put some stuff in an envelope like this and mailed it to me. When we got it, I'll never forget it. I brought it, didn't open it until we got to the meeting. Opened it up, and he had sent me literally 15 different versions of step four, none of which are how I do it today, which is just, you know, and he was 25 years sober, all right? So everybody picked one. We kind of decided on, let's do this, and we did it. And then we rode up to the mountains in North Georgia, found a real high one, and everybody read their four steps up there. And then we made a little fire, and everybody burned their four steps, and then we got in the car, and when we got back to where we were going and everybody split up, we were like on step 12, all right? And everything was kind of good. Next thing you know, I get a year. Next thing you know, back in them days, I don't know if they do it here, you know, CA did 18-month chips. Next thing you know, I'm between a year, did that pretty much standing on my head, all right? We're getting, my next goal was, you know, 18 months. And my sponsor at the time, who I love dearly, he has since passed away from MS, and that's a horrible disease, that's another story, but he came and picked me up one night, and he said, hey man, he said, I think my wife is messing around, and I need to know, so we're gonna go to these different meetings, and you're gonna go see what she's doing, and I'm gonna sit in the car. Fuck, sound like a good idea to me, man, that's what you do. And we go to this meeting, and you know, I get where nobody can see me because, you know, I kind of knew a lot of people. I'm looking around and they weren't there. We go to another meeting, they're not there. And somewhere along the line, it starts raining, pouring down rain. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to go in because this one sat where they had like a lot of windows like this. And I'm going to go up to the window. So I'm standing there and pouring down rain like this. And I'm, you know, every now and then I have to do this because I'm breathing. It's hot, you know, and she's in there. And she ain't with him, but she with somebody that, you know, the replacement, but I don't know, man. It just something went through my mind along the lines of, there's got to be more to it than this. And I started thinking that if that was me in that car, you know, I wouldn't be sending somebody in there. My ass would be in there, and it would be ugly. You know what I mean? And I'm talking, all these things can happen real quick in your mind in a real short period of time. And I'm thinking, you know, I would, you know, get fucked up, and I would kill somebody. And there wasn't a doubt in my mind. So I went by and said, there's got to be something different. So I go back to the car. I say, she's not in there. I'm soaking wet. Take me home. He drops me off. And I'm thinking, you know, something is just not right. So I asked my wife. I'm like, look, I've been sober over a year. You know, I want you to tell me about, you know, she come home, obviously, after I got sober, after like 30 days or something. I'm like, I want you to tell me the difference between me now and me then. And it went something like this, and we both agreed on this. A, I was sober, so that was like, that's a good thing. B, I went to a lot of meetings. That was a good thing. You know, I cleaned out ashtrays. I stacked up chairs. And that was really about it. You know, it wasn't that I had had some spiritual awakening. It wasn't that I had changed. It wasn't that I was a wonderful, good husband. It wasn't anything along the lines that, you know, deep down inside what we're really looking for. It wasn't any of that. It was just, you know, cosmetics. You know what I mean? And so I thought, you know, I got to do something different. And I really didn't know what to do. So I tell myself, you know what? It's Cocaine Anonymous. You know, I'm in a fellowship at that time in 1988. I think CA was like 4 years old, maybe 5 years old. Period. In Atlanta, it was even less than that. And I'm thinking, it's the fellowship. There's something wrong with the fellowship. So I decide, you know, I gotta go to AA. So I start going to some AA meetings. And so the CA meetings I went to would kind of like bitching, moaning, complaining, talk about cocaine. And the AA meetings I was finding was bitching, moaning, complaining, talking about alcohol. All right, now you gotta figure this is me and this is them. So somewhere in there, one of the things my sponsor made me do, because I used to go long periods of time in early sobriety of not having a driver's license. And so he would, you know, arrange for people to pick me up, take me to meetings and all that kind of crap. So, but he used to make, when I got my license back, he would make me do that stuff. So one of these guys that I was picking up, you know, now you figure I'm 26. He was like 22. I couldn't stand him, you know, but I did what my sponsor was telling me to do, but I didn't like this guy. But one of the things that I remembered this night sitting there thinking about, I got to figure something out, was that he talked about this group of guys he had met, and he talked about that what they did was different, and he would just talk about it like that. And so in my mind, I was thinking, it's a cult. You know, it's a cult, NAA, you know, they're fucked up, but I was desperate, all right? So that was when I went to my first big book study, all right? And it wasn't in a room, they were like this, you know, they were sitting up here at a table, and, you know, there was a guy sitting on the same row as me, and so Joe, this guy that was doing the book study at the time, he would say something, and it would be kind of smart-ass, and then this other guy that was sitting on my row in the back would, you know, like lob the softballs, and then this Joe would knock it out of the park, you know, and it was cuts to the fellowship, really, but it was because the book is the book. You know, it tells you how to do it. Boom, 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 boom. No guesswork. It's black and white, period, and story. And they would throw the little gray around. So I'm thinking during the meeting, you know what? I need to do something different. I'm going to do what these guys are doing. Oh, I know what it was. They were fixing to do step four. So he had this big easel, and he had written all this stuff on it, and it was all just, you know, and then he was reading out of the book, and the stuff in the book was like what he had written, and you know, he was talking about how you do a four-step. He was talking about they were, you know, went up through the resentments, you know, the routine, and went through the fear and the sex conduct and all that. And I'm thinking, this is what I got to do. So I tell the guy in the back, I'm like, it's obvious they were together to me. I'm going to ask this one because he's a little bit younger, and I was intimidated at the guy up front. So I say, introduce myself, and I say, look, man, I've been sober for, at that time, I think it was 14 months. I said, I've done all these steps, but I don't think I did the four-step right. So can we start there? He said, no, not really. You know, what we do is we do all our work outside of these meetings. And so I said, well, you know, when can we start? And he said, well, when are you ready? I said, hell, I'm ready right now. So that night, for the first time ever, I sat down with another guy in sobriety, opened up a book, you know, and he did the whole, like we do now, what do you see? I don't see nothing, you know, it's blank, like your mind, and that's what you know about recovery, you're a dumbass and all that. You know, which is all still lines I use to this day, right? And proceeded, so this was a Tuesday night. So Tuesday night, we go through from the blank page up to the doctor's opinion. On Wednesday night, I went to his house, because it turned out that he was the maintenance guy in the apartment complex I was living at. So we lived four doors down from each other. So I was there every day he'd get off work, I'd be sitting on top step. So I did that three nights in a row, you know, which three nights in a row to me, and then we'd gone through Bill's story. And then, you know, every night I'd go home and wake my wife up. You're not going to believe, man, I have found the answer. I have found the guys, you know, and I mean, I was like cloud nine. Well, after the third night, she's thinking I've relapsed and that, you know, I'm just not telling her. And she says, well, why don't you see if they'll come here. I'm like, sure. So on the fourth night, you know, I said, can y'all come to the house? And they said, yeah. Now, you got to keep in mind that my wife was not exaggerating, you know, 9.5 months pregnant. And so we lived in this little bitty small apartment. But there was, if you were in the living room, the bedroom was in the back, and the living room's here, and then the kitchen, you have to go through a door. But there was a little cubby hole that you could look through from the kitchen to the living room or vice versa. So we're in here doing the book study, or they're doing it with me, taking me through the book. We're on chapter 2. And she would waddle in and waddle in the kitchen. Well, I couldn't see her, but Pat ended up leaving. Joe became my sponsor. He's my sponsor to this day. All right, so this is 30-something years ago. So Joe's like, after like the third time, he said, why don't you just sit down and do this with us? Oh, that's okay. I'm not an alcoholic. And you know what he said? You don't have to be. This guy has advantages for everybody. Because Joe was like that. And my wife sat down and started, so I'm going through, and I don't know what the fuck she was doing. It was weird as shit, but it worked. All right? But we started, and I mean, it went like this. When I did my four step, and then I did my fifth step with my sponsor, when I finished my fifth step, two nights later, he did a fifth step with my wife. All right? So she had actually was doing the stuff too. So, you know, that's just kind of how it went. So probably during that time, there's a couple of things that happened to me early on that, you know, impacted me, you know, very, very, very dramatically. One of them was, so, you know, in them days, we do it different now, but in them days, you know, my sponsor, he would show you how to do, you know, like do your first three columns on resentments, and then they just send you out and tell you to call when you got done. All right, we don't do that no more, but that's how they did it with me. Well, you know, so I get up to a point, you know, a week goes by, 2 weeks goes, and he's asking me, you know, every couple of days, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? And I'm telling him, man, you know, I'm working 18. I was living in North Atlanta, working in South Atlanta. And that distance can be 100 miles, you know. And I mean, I'm in construction, was then, still am, working long days. It was all during the summer. And, you know, every time he would call, I had all the right excuses on, you know, my wife is pregnant. I'm trying to make as much money as I can. It's only one income, blah, 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 wham, 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 wham. And he would never say anything, all right? So one day I working for a guy down there, and he decides that, you know, I guess there was a dip in, you know, what everybody was doing, a recession, whatever you want to call it. So being the highest paid guy, you know, you're the first one they cut. So I'm sitting here, I'm at home, on a Friday night, I've lost my job, and I'm serious when I say that my son was born, you know, like 3 weeks later or something. He was 3 weeks overdue. So she's, when I say 9 months pregnant, she's 9.5 months pregnant. It sucked, but. So I lost my job, and I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking all these things, and, you know, I wake up the next morning, and I'm trying to think of all these things. I got to do something, and I'm miserable, and, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, nowhere in there is the answer work the steps, right? It's, I need to, you know, I'm going to hit so-and-so up for some money. I'm going to hit so-and-so up for some money. I'm going to call, you know, my mom will call all these people. Somewhere in there, my mom walks in and goes, oh, I didn't think you would be here. Well, I knew instantly what that meant. That meant my truck had been repoed, right? Because I parked out outside last night. So I call my sponsor, and I'm like, I said, you know, the condition Debbie's in, she hadn't been working, so we're one income. I've just lost my job. My truck's been repoed. You know, I don't know what to do. And I'm telling you, at the age I was and where I was, it was like, you see that picture of Atlas holding the globe? That was how I felt. That was real world shit happening to me at that moment. And he starts laughing. And I'm like, Joe, wait a minute. You know, I'm like, you know, back then, shit's got a cord hooked up to the other thing, you know? I'm like tapping it going, I don't think you understand. And I explain it all again, and he continues to laugh. And I'm like, you know, it's really not that funny. And he said, oh, yeah, it is. He goes, here's your choices. He goes, I'm going to make it quick for you. You know, God either is or he isn't, you know? You've been dicking around, not doing your four-step, and you've had all these reasons and excuses why you didn't have the time to do your four-step. And so God reached down there and said, here's some time, Dante. You didn't necessarily like the way it came and the package it was wrapped in, but that's God doing for you what you can't do for yourself. What are you going to do? I'm like, you know, I don't know, man. I'm going to think on this one. Click. So I'm sitting there and, you know, Debbie comes in and she's like, you know, because she knew I was fixing to have this talk with him. You know, she's thinking maybe he's going to give me some money. I don't know. She's like, well, what'd he say? I said, he told me I needed to finish my four step, man. And she's like, you need to call him back. He didn't understand. Da, da, da. I said, no, I think he understood. She's like, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, you know what? I think I'm going to finish my four step. And so that was one of them. I was at the crossroads moments, you know, and I decided that I would do something that I had never done before. And that was take some trust and put it in something that I couldn't see or couldn't touch or didn't ever speak to me, which was God, and just see if how this played out. Because, you know, at that moment in time, I really didn't have anything else to lose. And, you know, I'm gonna tell you the truth. I don't remember exactly when it was I got another job, but I did. I don't remember exactly, you know, when I moved, but it wasn't because I got evicted. I don't remember when I got another vehicle back, but it wasn't the one that got repoed, you know, but I do know that I finished my four step, and I finished it in like 19 hours, 20 hours, something like that. And then I did step five, and then I did step six, and then I did step seven, and then I did step eight, and I went right down the damn list here, and I didn't never stop again. You know what I mean? Because I thought, this is fucking dynamite. And there's been all kind of times, like, I'm not that guy that something happens to him and I'm aware of it then. You know, like, oh my God, I can feel that or whatever. That's never happened to me, all right? But what does happen to me on a regular basis is that all of a sudden I'll have a feeling and I'll be thinking of me 6 months ago, and I'll become real aware that the guy now and the guy 6 months ago are two entirely different people. And, you know, and the only thing that could have happened or could have changed has to always do with this program and always do with God. And that's the way that journey has been for me the whole time. Now, it doesn't mean that I do this perfectly all the time, because I don't. You know, if this was if it was as simple as turning your will over to the care of God and then something happening, the program would be three steps, but it's not. You know, it's not a question of, you know, if you fuck up, it's when. I mean, these are things that we all know. So, you know, it's been that way for me. You know, I make mistakes on a regular basis. You know, I have to make amends on a regular basis. I work with guys. I do. There's a ton of that stuff that happens, but the results are always the same, and it's been consistent through my, you know, I mean, think about it. So I've been sober 33 years. So when I don't have my glasses on, today's like the 22nd or something. So the 25th, I turned 59. All right. So I'm getting close to wrapping up this decade, right? Sober. I mean, I've been sober way longer than I did drugs. Let's get real here. You know, way long. I mean, if I stretch it out and say, oh, I smoked weed when I was seven, I've still been sober way longer than I did drugs. You know what I mean? And I'm going to tell you, I like that. You know, there's not a, I have a good life. You know what I mean? I have a really good wife. I have two great kids. My kids, the other ones that are fixing to be my kids, are all great. You know, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff. I've got a successful business. I mean, it's been rocky, but things are good. And all of those things are possible for one reason and one reason only, because I'm a drug addict and an alcoholic. You know what I mean? It's not because I'm smarter than everybody else, or it's not because I work harder than everybody. None of that. The number one asset I have, the number one thing about me, is that I'm a drug addict and alcoholic. All right, because what that enabled me to do was to find this program, was to work these steps, was to get a relationship with God, and that has made everything else possible. And none of that would have happened had I not been a drug addict and alcoholic. Therefore, that's the best thing about me, hands down. You know, it's like, you know, this, my daughter right here, who's coming up this summer, will be 5 years. So I've been on all sides of this recovery stuff. You know, I've been that parent, you know, who can't sleep because their kid is fucked up six ways to Sunday, no telling where they are. You know what I mean? You know, so, you know, I mean, you know, early age, I seen the, you know, the lug nuts were loose on them wheels. You know what I mean? And it's a scary thing to be in that position. You know, it's you know, it's rough. It's really, really, really rough. And, you know, so, you know, you it's easy to say, oh, you know, you just got to put it in God's hands, or you've just got to, you know. No, man, it's not, it doesn't work like that when that's your kid. You know what I mean? I mean, there's something different about being sober and then being dad, even if you're a sober dad. Sometimes the one can just kind of push some of that over, and it was just tough. It was a hard, rough experience, you know, but you know what? It had a happy ending, all right, coming up on 5 years. And you know what? I mean, you know, I'll tell you another quick funny story. So she's getting in trouble all the time. You know, I got an older son. You know, that son bitch saved his lunch money since he was in the second grade, and he's done it. You know, he'd come home. I never had to say, do your homework. He would walk in. He'd done all of it at school. And this would be, at home was extracurricular shit, right? And, you know, so that was the one who was older. And then there was the other one who, you know, was like us, right? So, you know, it's just different. But so somewhere in there, I'm thinking, you know what, I'm going to start, you know, kind of getting some phone numbers for some girls, because she going to end up being in a meeting. I'm going to be like, look, I got some numbers for you, sweetheart. And so I was in this meeting. Matter of fact, it was Spearheads in Atlanta, and it had been going on. I guess it was their 1 year anniversary or 2 years or something. I went in there and told them a story, and I met a few people. And 2 weeks later, I'm sitting in jury duty. And I'm sitting there, and I see the back of a head of a girl that I recognized. She had blonde dreads that I'd recognized from the Spearhead. So I thought, well, when it gets to be lunch, I'm going to go, hey, you remember me? And we'll go eat lunch. And we did. All I talked about was my daughter, because at that time, it was like, it was whistling. You know when the plane goes down and it's whistling? And the only thing left is impact? That's where we were. So I'm thinking, you know, look, man, if anything ever happens and she ends up here, da-da-da-da-da, I'm going to bring her to the meeting. You help me out, hook a brother up, you know, all that. And sure. So we end up, sure as shit, you know, like 6 months, 9 months later, I'm not exactly sure, we go to the meeting. She graciously shows up at the time I ask her to show up, and I introduce them, and Hannah got no interest, because Hannah got no interest in being sober at that time yet. And, so it didn't work out. My hand-picked person didn't work out. But this is how God works. So fast forward a few months, she got a sponsor, a good girl. You know, they tried to do some stuff in the book, you know. Not how I would do it, but. And then, but that's just me, all right? But so I'm in Nashville, Tennessee with my wife on a Thursday. I get a phone call, and it's Hannah. That's her name. And Hannah is meltdown. It's typical, nothing personal, female meltdown, right? End of the world shit. And, you know, it's probably got to do with nail polish. Who the fuck knows? But I'm kidding. Y'all know I'm kidding, right? So I'm like, listen, Hannah, you've got to go to Spearheads. You have got to get there, and you have got to get there early. You cannot fuck around with it, because I'm in Nashville and she's in Atlanta. I'm like, you can't think, I'm not going to go, I'm desperate, I'm this, I'm that. You have got to go. And she said she promised she would go. So I'm not going to say that I was worried till I heard from her again, but I was worried. You know what I'm saying? And so the other half of the story of that is that she does go down to the meeting, and then when she walks in, Tarek is sitting in a chair talking to somebody. Now, Tarek's known her since she was little, okay? So, and she's known Tarek. So, you know, she walks in, and Tarek's like, "Hey, Hannah, how's it going?" Meltdown, right? And so Tarek says, "You know what? Here, you talk to her," and leaves. And that her became Hannah's sponsor, took her through the book, the whole nine, and that was the girl that I'd handpicked from, you know, back in the day. Ah, so you tell me God doesn't work, you know, it works. It just somehow it always works. And, you know, she does what I did, you know, find people to work with, take them through the book. You know, Ben does the same thing. Her, you know, I hope not to, I have anything to do with it, but I wouldn't mind a young man being my, you know, in my family. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, Ben's one of them guys that, you know, because of this program and these steps, I thought, yeah, that would work. You know, I mean, I'm telling you the truth. As a dad, right? As a dad, you don't get to pick these things, but, you know, and we've become close. He, you know, now works for me, which is good for me. I don't know how good it is for him. But, you know, so at the end of the day, you know, what Any Links looks like is, you know, it's you know, in the book, they talk about it all the time, man. I mean, you know, it's just, it's not doing what you want to do when you want to do it. It's doing what you have to do when you need to do it. You know what I mean? And so, those are the things that I've been willing to do. You know, do I go periods of time without working with guys? Only until somebody calls me. That's as long as that can go. You know, I got guys all over the place. You know, I get a guy, you know, sends me a picture. He just turned 30, just picked up his 30-year chip. I got them all in the 20s, you know, the teens, the younger than teens. And then I got a guy who can't stay sober. I'm a three strikes and you're out kind of guy, you know, because I'm one of these people that I think that if you've relapsed and I've worked with you and then you've relapsed and I've worked with you and then you relapse, when you do that the third time, maybe you need somebody. Maybe I'm not the guy that can help you. Nothing personal. So I've just set up this non-arbitrary three strikes and you need to find another sponsor. But this guy's like on strike eight. You know, every now and then, and I know the ones who know me in this room real well are thinking this next line's going to be bullshit, but every now and then I can be a softy, you know, and with this guy, I kind of am, you know, and we're fixing to get, he's going to come over, you know, one day this week or at least after my sister leaves town or something. She's here visiting from New York. You know, the funny thing is that, let's back up. I'll tell you a funny story. So my brother gets sent off, he's 16, all right? My mom takes my sister, who's 17 at these days, to go visit my brother, comes home without my sister, all right? So when I had the choice from the judge to go to treatment, it's family reunion. It's my brother, my sister, and me, all right? Well, my brother, I've been sober 33 years, which didn't happen that time. It happened a little bit later. My brother's a couple of years behind me, but my sister, she'd been sober since then. You know, that's 39 years ago, I think. I think her next birthday is 40, and she's a year younger than me. You know what I mean? So you don't know. But, you know, I do not take, you know, anything about this program for granted. You know, I never have. I appreciate everybody that I meet, even the ones of y'all that I don't like. You know, I appreciate you. You know, I'm just being honest, you know, because, I mean, I've got guys, everybody that you sponsor or everybody that sponsors you don't necessarily mean you're going to be best friends. You know, I mean, me and Tarek, you know, the best thing really for us was for me not to be a sponsor because we got much closer after that, you know. And, you know, I've watched this, you know, I say young man, you know, tongue in cheek, but, you know, I've seen him blossom in a million different ways and become, you know, a fixture and, you know, recovery. And I've got a lot of guys like that. And that makes you feel good. I mean, I'm not going to lie. You know, I mean, I'll be the first person to say, oh, this ain't about your feelings. It's about how you think. Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, that don't mean we don't feel good. And I do. You know, I mean, Colin, fucking fabulous place, man. You know, and I appreciate you having this for these people. You know, I don't know where all else you go to meetings, but I bet it ain't like this. But, you know, when your heart's in the right place, you know, and I think this place is going to work out fine. But, you know, maybe I'm going to close because I'm getting a real bad mouth. My gums wore out, but you know, that's about it, man. I mean, I have guys that I'm actively working with, you know, and you know, I've got the best friends in my, you know, I'll tell you, it ain't about the fellowship, it's about the program all day, but all the best friends I have came from the fellowship, so there is that. All right, and you know, man, I'm glad to be alive. You know, I'm really, really, really happy I have a relationship with God. And, you know, this program has given me everything that I have ever dreamed about and could have possibly, you know, they come in, they tell you, you know, I forget what it is, you know, but no matter how good you think it can be, all right, like even the promises, no matter how you slice them, dice them, whether it's the ninth step or the 10th step ones or whatever, at the end of the day, this is, you know, what actually happens is always better. You know what I mean? So no matter how good you think it can get, you're selling yourself short. It's going to be better than that if you stay sober, if you do the work, you know, when you got to do the work. You know, I mean, the biggest thing I learned from my sponsor when he said, you know, Dante, God either is or he isn't. What is your choice going to be? Well, my choice at the time was, it wasn't, oh, it's God, because I'd not had a relationship with God. But it was definitely, this guy believes. And, you know, if he believes and it's been good for him, maybe if I do what he did, it'll be good for me. And that damn sure happened. You know what I mean? That definitely, without a shadow of a doubt, happened. And, you know, I couldn't be happier that, you know, my, you know, daughter is in this and doing the things that you're supposed to do. I mean, as a dad, I don't know that there's any more level of, you know, pride, you know, than that, than to, you know, have a little big book thumper as offspring. I'm just telling you the damn truth, right? And it's funny as hell because, you know, I can remember when I was, number one, a couple of things. She did not have a driver's license when she got sober, all right? And so my office is 6 miles from home. And so I told her, hey, there's this Atlanta. There's a meeting every hour on the hour. If you need to go, you let me know. I'll come get you and take you. You know, and so she was having to do that. But she would tell me all the time, you know, we're not going to be AA buds, you know. Hey, what are we? We AA buds, all right? And there ain't nothing wrong with that. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Dante. That was amazing.